Good morning, everybody. This is Annie for Showreel, and we'll kick off straight away. We've got Jonathan Alley on the line. He's made a film called Love in Bright Landscapes, and it's the story of David McComb of the Triffids. G'day, Jonathan. How are you?
Very well, Annie. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Great film. A lot of meticulous work. I'll have to say that I used to be a DJ on Triple R when the film, the song, the Wide Open Road came out, and I can remember it was on high rotation when we were there.
Pretty timeless piece of work. I mean, it came out and was written when Dave was in his early 20s, which when you consider that song is pretty remarkable, pretty mature and remarkable piece of work for someone of that age. Pretty atypical for the times. I think it was quite telling that it went top 30 in the UK while only just cracking the top 50 in Australia. Huh. But if you listen to it all these years later, it's a typical example of Dave's very, very multi-layered way of writing. It's an epic, graceful ride through the landscape, but underneath there is something far more dark and telling going on, and I think that's part of its longevity and part of its sort of, you know, wonder, really. So, yeah, I can still listen to that song after 13 years of making the film, which is probably something a bit remarkable in itself, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I came from the country, and so being in the city in the middle of Fitzroy, it just sang to me. It was just like it opened the book of Australia to in a way that had not been written before.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's very much part of, you know, some of the themes that we explore in the film, and certainly part of Dave's writing is that there's and he tricks you, and he tricks you very effectively. All the way through various elements of his songwriting catalogue this way, in that a lot of that writing which invokes the landscape and the countryside is using it as the canvas rather than the tent. It's a setting, it's a place. And there's a sequence in the film where we talk about his literary influence and people like Flannery O'Connor and how they would always set the place and the setting in their stories very, very early to give the reader kind of an immediate context for where they were. And I think that he does that in his songwriting, but the locations aren't the subject. The locations are just settings. And, you know, the dark love story that comes through, the writing is, I think, very much part of a kind of ambivalence to the country around him, in that it's sort of dark and unknowable, you know, because it's so old, and it's as white colonialist sort of second generation, third generation settlers in this country, it's something that was, you know, A, that was invaded, and B, was never acknowledged as being invaded, and that creates discomfort in the people that live in it. And I think the atmosphere and the music, even though it's overtly romantic, has that feeling of discomfort in it. And that's why one of the reasons I think people still listen to David's writing and listen to the Triffids is because they get this ever-evolving emotional reaction from it. It's familiar, but it's also unknowable.
But it's also David McComb, your film actually treks, of course, from Western Australia, from Perth, because that's where the Triffids and he came from. And I know that times have changed because of the electronic world that we all live in, but in those days it was a long trek to come, such an enormous emotional and massive talent, basically, his creative talent. I mean, people listen to him. If you're a words person, he's a wordsmith.
Oh, very much so. You know, that was just in him. You know, there was he was a, you know, very, very prolific poet, although that was a fairly private sort of personal part of his, you know, expression. All the poetry was posthumously published, sadly, but it was good that it was done. I mean, I think that fact that that was recognised.
Well, he died very young. And why did you decide to make this film? Because it's a very complicated film. It's very dense. It's got an amazing array of clips from all parts of his life. It's an amazing piece of honour to his spirit, really.
Oh, that's really lovely to say, and I hope it is, and thank you. So why did I decide to make it? I just think that as you listen to music over the years, I mean, as you've just been saying to me, you've been in the radio game for decades, music comes and goes. You know, some music will turn up in your ears and it sounds pretty great at the time, but if you turn it back on 10 years later, it's really dated. And you sort of have that moment where you go, oh, I used to love this song back in 1990-something, and now it just sounds like that year that it was made in. And I think a lot of these bands that get back together to kind of relive things, it's a nostalgic hit. You can never go back. It's all very well to go back to the time we were all young and we all fell in love. But
when we were all pretty.
Yeah, we were all pretty. It's just nostalgia. Whereas with, I think, the fact that Dave's work kind of lives, it's relevant, it's alive now, is quite rare in people. For a songwriter to be able to pull that off is actually pretty rare in music. I mean, Dave's not the only one who's been able to do it, obviously. There are a great many others. But the fact, I think, that he was able to do that, and Australia really just missed him, you know, I really feel that he was not acknowledged his due by this country. So that's one reason I made it. The other is that I think that he's one of those rare songwriters that deals purely in emotion. He's dealing purely with the emotional connection that he finds in music and that other people find to his music. And he's not writing about things in a very literal manner. I mean, David would never have done something so cheap as to write a protest song, for example. I'm not trying to, but in his...
He's living in a parallel universe with an emotional flavour.
Yeah, I mean, you know, writing something as literal as a protest song or a song very literally about something just wasn't in his way of doing things. He was extremely metaphorical, multi-layered, and took influence from, you know, just anything going. And so this, to me, is why he's the original punk, David Cohn. It doesn't matter whether it's a piece of Russian literature for 100 years from 100 years ago or something he sees in a horror movie, you know, whether it's New York punk rock or some weird piece of music that Brian Eno's made. He will take influence from everywhere. You know, he was such a sponge and such a magpie as well in the greatest tradition of songwriters. And to me, the combination that he's writing from that kind of emotional place, that Australia just missed him, and that he was his quality control was just so high. There's no bad record. And even with the greatest bands, you say, oh, those five records, they're fantastic, listen to them, but maybe don't get that one. You know, whereas you don't get that with Dave. It's all extremely high-quality stuff and quite timeless. And I think so the combination of those things, I hope, answers your question as to why I made this film. Because I think the work should be recognised. I think he and his story should be recognised. And I think people can take away from the film a great deal for themselves if they go back and listen to the music and read the poems.
Yeah, yeah, I think so too. It's interesting that there was a sequence, there was a classic moment when the band was being sidelined and they were glorifying the company, the record company was glorifying over the individual. That was a common thread that business did at that time with talent. It was quite an interesting revelation that it happened to them as well.
Well, I think they still do.
Yeah, I know, they do it all the time.
Change that much. But yeah, but I think that's a very crucial point in the story you pick up there, Annie, because I think that the point, the reason we actually make something of what happened with that record, which is the second last Clifford studio album, Calendar, was because to me that's the point where Dave just starts to get lost.
Unravels.
That's a little bit. That's the beginning of it. And I think that's what the film is. It's the story of someone who was so driven and so determined and so kind of intense about what they wanted to do, who still managed to just personally and professionally, really, when you come down to the final analysis, get lost. And I find that very sad. But at the same time, even though he did get lost, you know, the quality control just never went down, and the work rate just never went down, which is incredible.
The other thing about him is that they were really appreciated in Europe.
They were, and I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
We were having a preview screening last night, and this question came up from the audience as to why I thought the triplets were more popular in Europe than in Australia. I think it's partially a generational thing. They came up with a generation of fans. I mean, the Moodists, the Bad Seeds, the Go-Betweens, to a lesser extent, the Saints, although they'd sort of come a bit before, of Australian bands who landed in London at that time and just blazed the trail because they had really done the hard yards in the tough Australian pubs. They had played and played and played and played. By the time they got to Europe, they were just these crap units.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas Alzi was saying to me once that they expected to, they moved from Perth to the East Coast, played a bit on the East Coast and went to Europe. When they landed in the UK, they sort of thought, oh, it's going to take ages to get a reputation because there are all these really big British bands with all this industry support and they get on the radio and people know who they are. And the first gig they played, they just blew the band they were supporting off the stage.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard this too. I've heard this too, that the English bands used to mime.
Oh, yeah, well, it was the 80s. I think the other reason for it is more complicated.
Yeah.
I think people in Europe have this chipper kind of sunny view of Australian life.
Yeah.
They don't really understand that the, you know, the sunny country in the south where
the dark
everyone can make it. Yes, exactly. They don't understand the dark undertones of living in this country or living in this part of the world more generally. I see it as this kind of, and you would if you lived in Britain and you saw images of Australia
on
television where it's all sunny and everybody's happy and everyone's
neighbors
in their backyard and a fruit tree and everyone's got lots of money. Well, ha, ha, ha. We all know that isn't true. But, you know, when these bands would start to arrive with that dark undertone that you mentioned, they're seeing a whole new side of a culture they thought they knew, but they really didn't. And you combine that with the power of the live performance that we were talking about before, then people start talking. And I think that's what happened. I think that's why people like John Peel picked up on the topic.
That's why Echo
and the Bunnymen were friends with them and offered support. They sort of knew immediately that when this band arrived that
magic had arrived.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have to stop talking, Jonathan. We could talk for ages on Love in Bright Landscapes, but I have to stop, and it's a real pity. But you're opening in Sydney and Melbourne on May the 5th, aren't you?
That's correct. We open at Cinema Nova in Carlton on May the 5th, and really looking forward to that. And we've also got a Q&A. Well, Robert McComb and Graham Lee will be appearing with me at the Nova Carlton on May the 5th. And we've got a Q&A in Elstonwick on May the 7th at 4 in the afternoon.
At the Classic?
That's right, at the Classic. Thornbury Picture House, May the 7th, later that day at 8:30.
Good
and
stuff.
And then anyone in the Hills, I'm up at the Cameo in Belgrave with Rob Snarsky on the 8th of May. And then we play a big gig at the Astor Cinema with friends of David McComb live after the screening.
Oh, fantastic.
So the event starts at 3:30 in the afternoon. So we're busy little bees.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for talking to me, Jonathan, and good luck with the film because you don't, I mean, you know, you don't really need luck. It's great.
Oh, you do need luck, believe you me. It's about luck.
Au revoir.
Once luck is being ready.